This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down.
Roger that.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. God, family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trappin' Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trappin' Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do trap supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got it. Wildlife Control Supplies, proven solutions for wildlife control, delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're in the ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company, have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you. Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it, fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light, sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to dead camp. Shotgun toter, Republican voter. Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA. Cause this is what I say.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got...
Welcome to Trapping Across America. This is your host, Clint Locklear. We're going to be covering a bunch of different topics tonight about trapping. I mean, a bunch. I've got a bunch of emails that I'm going to be reading. It's sometimes it's simpler for me to answer some of these in verbal languages and text, just because I can only do so many texts, you know, in a day. And just for everybody to know, you know, if you follow me on Facebook under Clint Locklear, if you have a question and it's not personal, I mean personal, if you put it on the front of that on the Facebook, you're a better chance of getting it responded to, because, you know, 90% of the questions I'm getting you know, could be out in the open anyway. There's nothing really personal about that. And the reason I say that, some days I'm getting 40, 50, and 60 private messages. I go, you know, I'm busy for a couple of days. I come back, I've got 130 messages I'm trying to go through. And it's a time issue. Not that I don't want to talk to you, not that I'm trying to be rude or anything like that. Eventually, they just get lost somewhere down in the back. The last time I looked at Facebook on my thing, I've got 480-something private messages, and I'm probably just going to dump them. I've been trying to go through close to about 30 or 40 a day, plus all the emails and stuff like that, you know. So if you want to talk to me on Facebook, unless it's really personal, and it's better just to put it on the page because it would be easier for me to get to quicker when I go to look at it. So, but I do want to say one thing about Facebook. When I go to look up stuff and see what's going on, there's a lot of different trapping groups out there. Some are better than others, no doubt. Some have different, they all have different personalities. But the one that I found, that if you're looking for a group to get in on Facebook, the best one out there that seems to stay on topic a whole lot more and really cover a lot more pertinent information and things like that, that's Jeff Dunlap's Trapping Talk. And that's the only group I've ever signed up for, and I've been happy with it ever since. Somehow I end up on groups, and I don't know how that works, but that's the only one I've ever signed up for, and that's kind of one I stick with. And I do have one personal thing to ask everybody. If you're on Facebook, I have a farm that I'm starting that has a Facebook page, a business Facebook page. And if you enjoy this show, if you wouldn't mind taking just a minute or so going over there and like that page, because I've got some business meetings coming up and I just had to start the page, and it would look better if I had more likes and stuff on there. So if you would do that, I'd appreciate it. And the page is called The Farmer's Grove. You know, it's Farmer's apostrophe S and Grove. The Farmer's Grove, that's going to be the permaculture farm that I'll be playing around with in the summer. And I've got some really cool things that I'm doing that with some of the more high-end grocery stores and chefs and stuff in the summer. So that's the reason that page is there. You know, it's not a trapping page. That's not the purpose of it. Just like my Instagram is not about trapping. It's about permaculture. It's just two different things that I'm doing there. So please keep that in mind. And I'm going to go ahead and start off with the questions, because I'm going to try to rattle off through a lot of these if I can. And the first one is there still room in the business course? And, you know, I don't see why someone can't jump in right now. I wouldn't try to do this past March or so, just because of some of the stuff we got going on. You know, like the first thing we're going into in the course is, so you can relate to, you know, your customers through using certain techniques and things like that that most businesses don't do. And it takes a little bit of tweaking. So, you know, I would say if you wanted to do the course, you could probably join up no problem for about another month or so if you wanted to. But you're going to have to kind of hustle to catch up, because we're not doing this in a crazy pace, because that's the reason we're doing it so long. Everybody's got real lives, you know, this isn't college. So That's kind of what it is. So if you're wanting to do something like this, you know, you can go back and on here on Trapping Radio and see what you need to do. And then, but just be willing to put a little bit more effort in once you get into it, so everybody's caught up and on the same page as we get going. Okay. First question is also going to be from three different guys. So we're going to be talking about bobcats here, and I'm going to read these emails just so everybody knows who I'm talking to. Well, before we get to that, we're going to be doing a different one. The bobcats will be next. I picked up some Delta Red for beaver. I was wondering how much to use at each set and any set recommendations. The weather is changing here in Pennsylvania finally, and I'm fighting the freezing, so I need good attractive lures and baits to make catches before my sets freeze. Delta Red's a pretty strong beaver lure, and if you've got it, you know, beaver lure is one of those things. It's a little bit different when it comes to coyotes. I like using a little bit more just because there's normally being next to water and the weather and different things like that, and you're not dealing with an animal that can be turned off by too much. And, you know, but at the same time, if you use too much of something like beaver lure, you know, a gallon of beaver lure and a good sized glob on the end of the stick. And when I say that, I'm talking about an average sized man, the last joint on his pinky, you know, from that joint to the end of his finger, a pretty good sized glob. But going above that, a lot of times you don't get any more volume of odor out. You're just wasting the stuff. But that's about the size I use when I use a beaver lure. It's more than it is when I'm using it for coyotes, because the animals react so different to that that it doesn't do any good. But I think it does give you some advantages, especially when it's freezing, because if you're freezing, the more volume you have, even though the odors, the actual atoms are coming off of the lure itself and getting into the air, they slow down. And the more volume that you have at that point, even though it's slower, it gets out more. In a smaller volume, if it's a real tiny bit, which you'd probably be fine for a set, when the weather starts getting really cold, you don't have that type of advantage going on, because the surface of the lure is so small. And if you're dealing with freezing, especially with snow, think a little bit about your wind direction. You know, you can, if you're doing a caster mount set, you could put up, you know, don't get crazy with what I'm getting ready to say, but, you know, if you gave it a little bit of protection as far as the wind and the way the snow drifts, that'll help you a little bit. Just always thinking about everything that could go on in that set just makes everything work so much better for you. And that's kind of what I would do. When it comes to Delta Red on the style sets, Jason, you can, you know, the main one is normally a caster mound. I'll be honest, I don't do a lot of caster mounds anymore. Most of the time what I do is I slick up the bank. And because Delta Red does what it does with a beaver, I pretty much will just get the glob on the end of the stick and then stick that inside of the slide, probably about 14 inches back from where the water meets it. And by having it up on the stick and not on the ground, as the wind blows through that thing, it gives you just so much more smell as it's going out, which is what you want for a, you know, for a beaver lure, because it needs to coat kind of like that water. And if you're in more calm water, one thing you can do so you don't lose it is you can take a very small piece of it, like on a something that's corky, like almost a rotten piece of stick or something like that, and kind of smear that into it, and then stick that in the bank right where the water and the slide come together, where every time there's any water movement, it kind of goes up on that stick and it'll take those out, the odors out on the water for you. And that's this little trick that a lot of guys use that's pretty good. And, you know, you don't want to use that in a very strong creek or anything, because it's just going to get washed off there probably 40 minutes after you leave anyway, and you're wasting the lure. Another thing you can do with the Delta Red, because it gets so much activity from beaver, is if you look at places that, you know, just have high banks, just pure high banks, If you can kind of control how the beaver's going in, like if you got a little bit of stumps or mud clods or something like that, if you've got a high bank, you can almost muskrat trap beaver with that lure, because you can just stick it on the lure, the stick, stick it above probably, you know, 12, 14 inches out of the water, kind of like the old Ron Hansen way of doing raccoon trapping. And then you can set your trap down in the water, and the beaver will come up to that high bank and he'll piddle around. But since it's 12, 14 inches up, he's got to spend more time if he's actually going to mess with the lure itself, and you get a lot more foot traction. And if you've got, you know, high banks or overhanging banks, it's amazing how deadly something as simple as just sticking lure on a stick, setting it up on the bank and putting a trap in front of it on beaver works. It's like a flat set, you know, of working that. But that's kind of the main ways that I use that lure. Especially when it's coming into, you know, you start getting cold weather and stuff like that, think about protecting it a little bit and you'll be good to go. Use a little bit more when it's cold weather, like I said, instead of being too stingy with it. And then when the temperatures are warmer, like earlier in the season, or if you actually go somewhere and do spring beaver trapping, you can cut that volume down, but the volume to the animal is the same. So, you know, always think about everything that's going on around you and how everything affects everything, and things just start coming together. Now, the next one we're going to do is kind of a three-part thing that... And this one is from Kobe. I've come to find out about you through research and trapping bobcats. After one killed our pet chicken the other night, my wife sees it in the mornings near our house on the way to work. I'm in the city limits in a large subdivision with houses on all sides. I've put a game camera up on my chicken coop and was thinking about brushing in a live trap next to my coop. Steel traps would be tough because I've got young boys that play back there every day. The cat is very comfortable coming around, and I've even found some scat on my driveway this morning. He killed my chicken two nights ago. I know he's gonna come back. Any advice? Well, I'm gonna go into this, Kobe, but I wanna, so we're not backtracking too much, I want to go into a separate one. And let me find this email real quick. Because I'm getting more and more of these where people are getting the backyard chickens and the ducks, and the predators are just tearing them up. And it's a shame. You know, I mean, if you're going to have these animals, it's your job to protect them. Okay, this is from Robert. Hello, let me start by saying I'm glad I found your website. Secondly, I've never trapped a bobcat yet. I live in central part of Oklahoma, right on the Red River. There are not many bobcats around, but I've seen a dozen or so in the last 2 years. I've always wanted to trap bobcats. My question, what sort of traps should I use, bait and lures? What kind of signs should I look for as placing my traps? Thank you in advance for any advice you give me for the beginner. Well, I'm going to kind of do these two the same, and then I'm going to talk about a different bobcat one here in a little bit. It was a little bit different. What size trap you should use? If you're being in an urban environment, even though Robert's not in an urban environment, you know, think about the bobcat itself. Most of them had pretty big feet, so if you're going to go steel trap, I would at least, at a minimum, go with a number 2 size to a number 3 size. And what that actually means is probably 5 5/8 jaw spread to 6 1/2 inch jaw spread. You can go to a bigger trap, one, if it's legal, and two, you're sure enough in places you're not going to be dealing with domestic pets and stuff like that. So use your head when you start, you know, getting into some of the stuff you've seen me using in Texas. Now, the reason you want that size is because it fits the bobcat. Now, the cage trap for Kobe in the urban environment, you also have to think about the way a bobcat, you know, thinks, works, and his body style. Bobcats for cages, they like more narrow traps. So most good bobcat traps, you know, are anywhere from 9 to probably 12, 14 inches wide at the most. But the difference between that and a coon trap is they're taller. So that way the bobcat doesn't physically have to do anything funny to go in the cage, which makes a big difference to get a cat sometimes to go in the cage. And you want to have that set in place on a very good location, but you want to have a taller trap so he doesn't have to duck. That's normally the biggest problem with a coon-sized trap. You can catch bobcats in a big coon trap, but a lot of times you're gonna have a lot of refusals from that, you know. And if you've got one that's in your yard, or you're only seeing a few, you really got to think about what you're using and be a little more specific with it. Now, as far as cage traps goes, the one that I designed that you can get from Wildlife Control Supplies, they're the ones selling it. You know, they're one of the sponsors. You'll see a link down in the show notes there, or give them a call. They'll know which one you're talking about. The trick of the cages when it comes to cats is, one, you always want to have either dirt or leaves or pine straw or junipers, you know, Duff or something. You want to have it where the bobcat doesn't know from the feel of its feet that it's walking on wire. Because that's a big no-no when it comes to setting a bobcat cage. You'll also want to have a cage that's deeper most of the time than a coon trap. When you look at the body size of an average, even a decently sized female, she's so much longer than a plain raccoon is. And that alone is going to have a variance on the trap. Most traps that are set up for bobcats are probably 34, 36 inches long, some of them up to 40. And if you have a lot of dogs in the area, I would highly recommend that if you're going to use a cage trap, that you get one with a guillotine style door, which means it goes straight down. Not the kind where it's connected at the top and it's kind of like on a hinge. And then when it's set, it's sticking out straight out in the air. That's not what you want. Because if you got a lot of dogs and stuff around you, a guillotine size style trap, most of the time what you'll see is you can catch a feral dog or a house dog or a hunting dog, and that guillotine will come down and hit that dog in the back. And because of the nature of a dog, when something spooks it, it backs out. So it's not in the trap when it, you know, it's not all the way in the trap when it fires. And this is by design on a good bobcat trap. So it comes down and hits the back of the dog. The dog then can go out. So if you've got dogs running around your neighborhood, you go out and the trap is just set off. You probably had a dog try to get in there and he set it off, then backed out. But the beauty of this is you don't have to deal with the dog or turn him loose or anything like that. You just raise the door back up and you're back in business, which really helps you out as far as, you know, making this a kind of an easy thing. Now, as far as baits and lures, you can, you know, on the cage trap, you can definitely brush in the sides, which I would definitely do some. You don't have to make it look like a total cave or anything. You're just trying to help guide the bobcat. Now, since y'all have seen this bobcat and you know where it's walking, that's where the trap goes. Don't think that just because you put lures somewhere in your yard that it's going to draw that cat over. That's not necessarily the case. You want to have, if you can imagine, if you went out there and watched the cat and watched how it walked through your yard, whether it be up a, you know, fence line or tree line or however that thing's coming in there, if you were to paint on the grass the way that cat's moving through there, you just want to be right off of that travel way with a door facing that travel way where you would paint the line where the bobcat was walking. Not that you need to paint a line now, but that's why you can kind of see the travel way. And then you do that. Your baits and lures, unless you're going to be dealing in an environment that has got just nasty long winters, it's already been in it for a couple of months, you've got deep snow, I would kind of leave the baits out of the equation. I would go strictly towards the holy grail of catching bobcats, in my opinion, is a really good lure and the smell of a cat. Now, with me, the really good lure is going to be Cat Collector. The smell of the cat is going to be Booty Call, a cat gland. You can use urine, no problem, but you want to have the body odor of a cat. So you've got a good lure and the body odor of a cat, either through a gland lure, fresh type like Booty Call, or with a urine, all of that in the back of the cage in the very back. And presentation makes a big difference in a cage trap because you want to have, you know, like a big wad of grass and have some cotton and some, you know, maybe some bird feathers or duck feathers out of your coop. And you just kind of mix that in so he's got something to look at back there and it smells good. He's going to be more apt to go into it than just odor alone or just visual alone. And you can kind of work that up just a little bit that way. So that's one way to do it. And I do the same thing, Robert, when I'm doing footholds. Think about the top cage that I just mentioned. It's long, it's narrow. Instead of having the cage there where the cage sides are, I kind of brush up the sides. And I have it where it's really, really impossible or so uncomfortable a cat does not want to go through there. But when he gets directly in front of it, it's an easy path to get to the lure in the visual. I'll use the same type visual for a cage as I will for a foothold trap. That doesn't change. I use the same lure in the body smell of a bobcat with a cage or a foothold. That doesn't change. The equipment's the only thing that's changing. And my advice to you, if you're going to be trying to get these bobcats, keep your trap back. You know, think about you have your, like if you're using a dirt hole for an example and you're going to put a bunch of grass and feathers and stuff back there, make sure your trap's at least 18, 20 inches away from that hole in that narrow part where you pulled up the brush on the sides. That way, if a cat decides to stop and look it over, he's already on top of your trap. If you've got your trap really up close to the hole, a lot of cats will sit back and just look at it and ponder things and, you know, think about the secrets of the universe, and then they kind of walk off. And if your trap's really up close, you really don't have a chance to get them. So instead of doing more like a predator style set, like with the, you know, a standard dirt hole, well, you know, this two-sided cubby, it didn't have to have anything on top, but you want to have a long, narrow chute that he sees very well. I'd stay away from the stepping sticks and different things like that. You don't want to use big logs. You don't want to use big rocks. When you pull stuff up to the side, it should be something like brush tops or, you know, take a set of pruners and cut the ends off some trees or limbs. You don't want it to be something he can physically walk on, because if you give him something to walk on, he's going to walk on it. And you don't want to do that, you know, at all. So that's kind of the basics of doing it. And my recommendation, and even to the other gentleman I'm going to be talking about the bobcat with, the best thing you can do is go to my YouTube channel, which is Wolfer Nation. W-O-L-F-E-R Nation YouTube. It's free. And search bobcat, and you will see me doing sets just like I'm telling you over and over again. And I also show how to set up the cages inside of that, and you'll see how the cages are being set up, and you know the results of that afterwards. So you can get a better grasp. Sometimes with just talking, it's kind of hard. But the bobcats don't need to be hard. But the biggest thing of it is they need to be where the cats are going to go. Now, Robert's question asks, what kind of signs should I look for? Well, sign is a funny thing. The best thing is going to be tracks, which I don't know how I'm going to describe that exactly with words, but it's they're similar to a dog track or a coyote track, except they're more rounded, and 99% of the time you can't see the claws. But you can get online and you can, you know, look up bobcat track and study the difference between a coyote track and a dog track, and you kind of get those three together. You could even have it on your phone if you're not sure about it. So when you're out there and you're not sure what track you're looking at, you could pull that up, you know, on your phone. You could save a picture or something like that and see what it is. Tracks or droppings is the best sign you can find. Now, the droppings of a coyote and the droppings of a bobcat are different. So there again, if you go online, you can be able to take pictures of the difference of them and have them on your phone. But to me, it's pretty simple once you kind of see it once or twice. A coyote dropping, you know, the scat part, the turd, whatever you want to call it, is kind of like your finger. And most of the time, it'll be broke off with a short piece, and you'll have a longer piece, but it'll be sharp on one end. You know, I mean, like where it was squeezed off. And it's not a pile like a domestic dog does if he's eating dog food. It's not like that. Now, a bobcat is somewhat like that, but the ends of the dropping are more rounded. They're a lot straighter. And if you look down at one of your fingers, you'll see you've got a joint, and then you've got the middle part of your finger, then it comes together at a joint, then it kind of spreads out and it comes together at a joint, and then it rounds off on the end. That's the same way that a bobcat dropping is when you see it out in the woods. It can be single, it could be a double, it could be whatever. But that's the other part of the sign that I'd really be looking at. The tracks and the droppings. Now, depending on where you're at, you know, of how tall the grass is, if there's any open ground, stuff like that, it may be hard to find the tracks and the droppings. And when that's the case, you have to start looking more about travel ways or locations for that. And the best thing to do starting out is figure out where the food is at. It's normally going to be thicker. You know, depending on where you're at in Oklahoma, you probably have a lot more open ground that you can see long distance at. Where you have a hedgerow of something like splitting the property, and all of a sudden you get thick, or you get a bunch of autumn olives or something like that, where it's really thick, that's where your rabbits and your songbirds and stuff like that's going to be. That's where your rabbits are going to be, and that's where you want to set the trap. If you've got a creek, you know, a river like you're talking about, I would start setting these traps up, because that's what I do here. You know, we're just now getting the water down enough that I can get back to doing that. But around here, that's my main location, is creeks and rivers. And what I'm looking for on that is, you know, you look at a trail on the side of a river. If it's right up next to the water, it's probably a raccoon. Then you go up the bank and you'll find a bigger trail, and that's usually going to be bobcats, raccoons, fox, some deer, stuff like that. And then if you even go further away from that water, you'll find another trail. You know, and every location's different. You know, you may only have two, you may only have one, depends on how steep the bank is and everything going on. But the ones that I'm really concentrating on are the ones right on the top and the third farthest one out. That's where most of the cats here travel. They hunt up and down the rivers because it's thicker. There's more prey species. Stuff gets washed up. They have a lot of birds. So that's where the food's at. You know, think thickness. If you have any swamps or beaver flows and you've got fields around it, where that edge of that field and the swamp starts, great location. Beaver dams are a great location. But think, most of the time it's going to be your thicker areas that you're going to be looking for. If you look on a map, when you're talking bobcats, it becomes a little more easier. If you get Google Maps of where you're at, and if you've never used it, Robert, it's not hard. You just, you know, kind of get an address of something close to you, and you can move the map around, and you can see, and you can back it up or make it go tighter. When you back it up and you really can't see little bitty details anymore, you'll start seeing the thicker areas if you kind of squint your eyes, and they'll look like rivers. You know, tree lines and the creeks and the river flowages, that's where you go concentrate. You know, those thicker areas. And when you pull it up on Google Map, then you can see where they're at, and you can see your road access. And then that way you can go, well, if I go in by Farmer Bob's and I go down that two track, I'm going to come across that, you know, this thick area, you know, right there that flows on forever, because that's what you're wanting. You know, these green, almost like green rivers on the map that go on for a long, long time, because those cats will work up and down that looking for prey species. And then you can see, well, over here it comes close to the main highway. And then over there, if I go behind, you know, the industrial complex, it squirrels around back over in there. And you know how to get to it is where that you need to set the traps off by using Google. And that's a very easy way to do that. But always the actual tracks and the actual scat are going to be killer on that, as far as being, you know, just dead nuts on location all the time. Okay, next question. Okay, can you give me information on what to use on making and how to make portable pockets? I'd like to make some to use, and I think they would work great in the snow. They do work good in the snow. The design of a portable pocket can be a lot of different things. It's basically a pipe that's on a rod that that you either use as a stake or you don't have to use it as a stake. I've got a whole podcast on portable pockets if you search for it. The basis of it, if you get something like an inch piece of pipe or up to 2 inches and you cut them in, say, 6 or 7 inch lengths, the pipe, that's your pocket. And then you'll drill a hole in the back side of the pocket. So you're laying your pipe on the ground, just say one side's the front and one side's the back. On the back side, come in about an inch and a half and drill a hole the same side as the rod that you're going to be using. You're going to slide your rod up through the pipe and you're going to weld it top and bottom and give yourself a little bit of rod on top of the pipe so when you're beating on it, you're not hitting the pipe itself, and it really protects your welds. The biggest thing on these is the type of rod you use. You use smooth rod if you're going to stake to it. Never, ever, under any circumstances, use re-rod if you're going to stake to it. Because every time the animal comes up on re-rod, it's going to be jacking that out of the ground. You're going to lose your animal, your trap, and your portable pocket till you find it. So no re-rod. It needs to be smooth rod. A half inch, good. 7/16 is okay. And that's basically it. It's not brain science by any stretch of the imagination. You could use PVC as long as you don't stake to it, because the coyote will eat the PVC and then he can take, there's a good chance he'll be able to take however you're staking it to it from the bottom up. So you don't want to use PVC. If you're going to use PVC or you're going to use re-rod on these, don't stake to it. On the real portable pocket, that stakes normally for most ground air is going to be like 32, 34 inches long. Because you got to have enough depth in the ground to hold the animal and enough to hold your pipe out of the ground a little bit. But if you're going to just use it for the portable pocket part and not to stake with, and you're using PVC or the rebar, now you can just have it with the depth to hold the pipe up. You know, with enough rigidity so if a coyote starts chewing on it trying to get your bait out that he doesn't knock it over, but it's not there to support anything, and then you can go to, you know, some of these other things like rebar. But do not use rebar if you're going to stake to it. And if you do, don't get mad at me when you lose your trap, because you're going to. Okay, next question. Glory Bill. Okay. I watch Clint's rant about Tiny Trap Club, and I would like to go bigger. However, I'm a small 65-year-old male who doesn't have the upper body strength to handle big old traps. That being said, I've just invested a couple of setters, but that's off my query topic, so I'll get to it. In many of your videos, you show an oversized pan. Do you offer any, or are we up to the mercy of our own ingenuity on this one? I'd like to get some Montana number 3, 2 cool dogless traps, but like the idea of the bigger pans. If you don't handle add-ons, do you know of someone who does? I don't. I don't make them. And luckily, for anybody listening to this, there's a really good company that's making these called Expand-A-Pans. Chip, which has also done some of the radio interviews, like with Wayne Derrick. That's the dude that makes them. And that way you kind of already know who you're getting these from. But instead of just having an add-on to the pan, most of his, I believe all of them, but most of them, you replace the original pan with a nut and bolt. Now, a number 3 Montana, though, Bill, it's a dogless based off of the old, what were those things? They weren't Bridgers. Oh, shoot. Started with an N. Anyway, I'm not sure that he's got them for those, but he may have something that you can weld. And if you get a hold, if you look down in the show notes under Okie Cabon Trap, you'll see Expand-A-Pans, and you could get a hold of him that way. To get you those. I'm not sure though on the Montana number 3 that you'll be able to swap out nut and bolt because it goes down through the frame and everything else. But he may have something that you just kind of either weld on or rivet on that trap. But if you're going to get something to trap with, let me give you a recommendation. Montanas are good traps. I've got dozens of them. They're good traps. If you're wanting a big pan and you're wanting probably a more refined trap that's beefier and is going to last longer and something you could give your grandkids, I would go with the Bridger number 3 Dogless. It's a Dogless trap like the Montana. It's a different setup. And with it, I know Chip's got expanded pans to fit on the number 3 Bridger because I've got them on mine from Chip. And they work very well. So I would lean towards getting the Bridger number 3 Dogless. Not that the Montanas are bad, but I think that they've upped the game a little bit with the Dogless with the Bridgers. And that's just my opinion only. But, you know, that's kind of what I would do. When we first started that, you know, no one was making them. I didn't want to get into it. You know, I was using all kind of stuff I'd get from the hardware store. Mine were crooked and ugly and everything worked fine. But, you know, when you get something like the expanded pan on there, I mean, it looks like it comes from the factory because basically it comes from a craftsman that does it. So, you know, get a hold of Chip. He wholesales those to Okie Cable and Trap, and you can get them from there, which is one of our sponsors that you can link on to the show notes down there. But, you know, great question. Because the big pans, if you've never used them, you may be questioning them, but what you'll find out is if you start using them, you're not going to want to go back to not having them. I mean, I can't even imagine muskrat trapping now with a regular pan. I mean, it makes that big a difference. Okay, now this is from Tony. I've enjoyed your videos on YouTube. Have you ever used a grapple drag with a snare? And if so, what do you recommend? Well, yes, I have. And I'm not sure. I'm not going to say I don't recommend it, but it didn't work as slick as I thought it would. There are definitely places that I would still use them today, even though that's not my normal thing anymore. First off, you need a good drag, and I mean a good drag. The little rebar things or the bent smooth rods that you can buy really cheap, that is not what you want to do on this. You need to get something like the saber tooth, which you can get from F&T and I think Minnesota carry them. A lot of different places carry them. That drag is about the minimum I would ever try to do this with, because with a snare, you don't have the weight of the chain. And it's going to bounce a lot with a coyote moving forward. And you got to think, a coyote has all four wheel capability when you have him around the neck. And it's not like you've taken one of his wheels when you've taken him in a foothold trap. So you got to keep that in mind. He's going to be a lot more powerful in a snare than he is in a trap because he's got all four wheel drive there. Saying that, if I was going to consistently set up drags and snares, and there's really good places to use this. There's some properties that's been reclaimed mining places around here where it looks more like out west. There's really good trails, but there's a lot of people, especially at night, go spotlighting and stuff like that. And it's nice to be able to get the animal as far away from the spotlights as you can. And that's when I played around with these more than anything else. So there is a place for these, I believe. Now, the best way that I found to do this is I would take the drag off one of my traps that already had the chain. Now, the chain on mine are going to be about 8 feet, you know, because once I take the trap off of it, you know, I'm leaving the stock chain on there. So I've got about 8 feet of actual chain. If you don't want to do this, try to get something like a 14 inches, 2 feet of serious logging chain for weight. to keep the drag where it's coming in contact with the ground more. And you can hook that up to your drag, then hook your snare into it. But you want to have distance between your drag and your snare. So if you're using short snares, you know, like the way a lot of them are sold, you know, they're, you know, 3 footers, 5 footers, stuff like that. You want to be using a snare that's probably at a minimum 8 feet. And then the big heavy chain and the drag. You'd be better off if it was even longer. You know, and that's the reason if you set your drags up with the chain and you can go back and forth, you just with some quick clips or something, you can unhook your trap. If you know you're going to be using these things, hook your snare up into it. Now, I still wouldn't use a tiny short snare just because the chain and stuff will be in your way, but enough that you can open your loop, have your cable flow down to the ground, then be connected up to your chain. And then you can go with it that way and you'll have a lot less troubles. But just having a long snare with a drag on the end, you're going to be doing a lot more hunting than you want to. And if you don't use a really good quality drag, you know, it doesn't have to be the Sabertooth, even though that's what I recommend. It has to be something like that. It's got to have some really good points that really dig in, and they can, you know, you can hold a coyote in a hay field with a Sabertooth, but there's not many drags that you can do that with. And that's what you want to have, that type quality when you go to do that. If you're going to try to do this, it's a cool idea. I've seen a lot of guys, you know, out west that'll do this because they're, especially if they're bobcatting, they'll go in and they won't use grapples per se, but you know, you get into places like, I was talking to one guy that years ago he was snared in California, and he would just take a backpack in on some of these hiking trails, and he would make like a 12-mile loop walking. And the way that the timber was, especially in high elevations, got really squirrely and it was very sparse. But then you would come across places that got thick, but not thick enough to really tie a bobcat to. So what he would do is he had, I think there were 14 or 16 foot snares. And then he had the ends where you had a double ferrule, but it would slide through there so you can open it and close it, make it bigger or smaller. And then he had a single ferrule, and he was using, if I remember right, he was using 5/64 inch loop and 3/32 inch pigtail. And then he would look around till he found either a big rock or, you know, an old cedar tree or something that he could use there on the spot. And he did very well with the cats. The only downside is if you're using the wood on the coyotes, make sure that it's not something they can chew through before they get back to you. And the longer your snare is, again, for that, gives him more to play with instead of just focusing where he's tied up to, because they can really chew some stuff up. I mean, I've had them chewed, you know, hickory and white oaks up as big around as probably 2 inches thick in one night. So think about what you're using for that if you go that route. So I do know it'll work, and I've done it and it works okay, but it's just not the same if you don't have a chain with it, which may defeat the purpose of the snare and the drag and whatever you're shooting for there anyway. Okay, next question. I believe this one is about Coon Whisperer. Let's see here. I'm trying to keep all these in order. Okay, first off, this trapping episode 183 and 184 were great. I enjoyed the podcast, challenged my thinking, the purpose of thinking philosophy. I think that was constructive. Problem solving is a huge benefit over expanding new ideas. Anyway, whatever happened to the Coon Whisperer? I remember you were sure excited about this new product earlier in the year, and I haven't seen a thing pop up on it. Is it developed? Just curious, not prodding. Jesse, yeah, it is, and I guess I could put it, you know, when I was all excited, and I still am excited about it because I'm using it, but just by accident, I picked on a friend of mine's product by complete accident, using the exact same prices and stuff like that. And you know, it's just one of those things, just for me personally, you know, and I talked to him about it. The way that I explained it on here, it was like I was going after what he was doing, and that definitely wasn't. So basically, just to make me feel better about the whole deal, and he told me to go and put it on the market. I'm waiting till next spring to put it on the market. I've got like 600 bottles of it made, but I just want to hold off on doing that. So basically, my buddy can come up with a defense against what I'm doing if he needs to. He may decide he doesn't need to. I don't know, but yeah, I've been using that. It's been working very well. The thing that was more exciting to me than I realized was I could catch fox and coyotes with it alone. You know, so that even brought it to a different level for me. But as strange as it is for me not to put it on the market when I was excited, and I'm probably not explaining it right, but the way that I described it was too close to a friend of mine's, something he does, and I just decided to hold off for a little while, just so if he wanted to do something different, that he had the opportunity to do it. So that's why, you know. And in the spring, I'll have it. Now, I had it at conventions, and it sold really well, and then I've had guys trying to reorder it since then, so I know it's working for a lot of people that's tried it, but that's just kind of the reason. I know it's kind of a weird answer, but it's just, you know, with me, especially with friends and stuff like that, I'm very cautious of doing any things that may even seem like it's being aggressive. And but just by the way that worked out, so the easiest way for me to reconcile is that is I was just going to wait a year to put it on. He knows it's coming, so there's plenty of time to figure something out. As crazy as that is, that's just the truth. And you know, plus with the coon market the way it is this year, I'm not sure it was the best year to bring that out anyway, honestly. Okay, now the next one is about mafia sets. Okay. Jacob. I'm having trouble keeping deer out of my mafia sets. Is this just part of it, or is there a way to prevent it? Yes, it is part of it, but there is ways to prevent it. And I'm going to explain to you how to do this. For someone that's never heard me describe this, a mafia set is a two-trap, two inline trap blind set in a trail that'll catch everything. And it's there's no defense against this with a coyote whatsoever. That's the reason I'm so high on this set. It's one that if I start getting in trouble, the mafia sets start going out very, very quickly. The thing with a blind set is anything else going up down that trail can definitely pop the traps off. So, you know, but you get that with regular lured sets anyway. Now, what I've learned to do with this, if there's an area that's got a lot of deer, like when I'm in Texas and I'm doing predator control, when there's a lot of deer, the deer don't like anything that they can't see very well and spooks them. So what I've learned to do, if I put a mafia set in a trail, if there's any type of brush or trees, or I guess if you had heavy enough grass, you could do this. I've always found a way to use it with trees or whatever. What I'm doing is I always carry the baling wire that you can get at Tractor Supply. Not so much what you get from a trap supply house, because it's thicker and it's more expensive. But it, you know, the baling wire is, I think it's 16 gauge. It's either 16 or 18 gauge. You know, it's not something you really want to tie an animal off of, but it's what they use. You can get them at a hardware store or anything like that. And they come in these rolls, so I always have one of those in my bag. Well, when I'm putting in a mafia set, if the deer start becoming an issue, what I'll do is I will kind of look at that set and I'll step back from it, and anywhere between 2 feet and 20 feet, if there's a way to put think about a tripwire across the trail. If there's any way to tie that up where it's above a coyote's head, but it's going to hit a deer, and then I just run that wire around it. If it's really thick, I'll just take that wire and basically run like a 4-foot circle, 2.5 feet in the air around the mafia set. So what happens is deers come down the trail, they're bebopping along. You haven't used any lure, so there's nothing to let them know that anything's going on. They've been going down this trail forever, and all of a sudden they hit something. Now, when a deer hits something that he's not expecting to be there, they do the same thing every time. They run away like a banshee, and it's backwards the way they do it. They back up and they bolt. And when they bolt, anybody else that's in their group bolts. They don't have to know why they're bolting. That's just what prey does. So by having this wire that's kind of harder to see, I wouldn't go down as far as like real military tripwire because it's not strong enough. A deer will break it too quick. But it'll do is it'll keep that away from keep that deer away from your sets, because you want to have it. If you can imagine, if you look at where your trap is going to be, go up and down the trail both ways and kind of block him with that wire, or you can just like encircle it. And about 2.5 feet off the ground, a coyote will just be at a natural gait and never pay any attention to it. But when that deer comes, it's going to hit him about chest high and at the legs. And I really like using this if there's like small whippy type of stuff. I can, I'm not like trying to hook this to a 6-inch oak tree or something. What I want is something that's about the size of my thumb, one of my fingers, pretty big guy. So keep that in mind of what that is. So when the deer hits it, the brush jumps on both sides of him. And the deer will come close to having a heart attack, and the deer will leave. And that'll keep most of them off. Now, if you're going to leave the set in for more than probably 2 weeks, you need to move that around every now and then. Once that wire's there and everything gets used to it, they'll start adjusting to it. And then they'll just duck under it. And that's not going to do you any good. So if you move it up or down the trail, if you're going to be somewhere for more than 2 weeks, I'd definitely do that at least once or twice to keep them off of there. But that's what I do with them, because deer can be a big old pain when it comes to working, with a mafia set. But that's just everything's got its advantages and disadvantages. The advantage of the mafia set that's so powerful that most people overlook, especially newer trappers, is they think they've got to do something to make the animal do something. And the better trapper, over time and over the years, the less that trapper makes the animal do anything that's not out of the ordinary, the better the catch becomes and the easier it is to do. And that's why the mafia set is so powerful. When you have that and the coyote's coming up or down the trail, he's pretty much caught. When I had Daisy, my trap line dog, she would get caught in those traps within 3 minutes of getting out of the truck. It was amazing. And I could not catch her in a dirt hole or a flat set or a urine post set or a snare. But even though she was around the traps ever since she was about 6 months old, she had no defense against that set. That's why it's the way it is. If you know there's coyotes coming up and down the trail, don't be afraid to put two or three of them in there. Because it's really cool with the mafia sets. You come up and you've got a double on coyotes and a red fox, or a red fox, a coyote, and a bobcat, or a coon and a coyote and a possum. You just never know what you're going to have. But if something goes down that trail, you're going to know it because he's going to be looking at you the next morning. That's the reason the mafia set is so powerful. Okay. Next question. A Okay, I'm just getting started trapping. This is from Becky. I'm just getting started trapping and love your input. I'm just getting started. I was wondering if I can use lures from 1 year to the next and how to maintain their quality. I can only run 6 traps and would love to catch more coyotes. Caught first one on December 5th. Had one pull out on December 8th. And since I can't get them to visit any sets, what bait and lures would you recommend for me in upstate New York? Currently using Hallbaker's Fox Bait and Fox Frenzy Gland Lure. The best way to keep lure and bait together, Becky, is the two enemies of bait and lure, because they're going to be organic, at least some form of organics in there, you know, with meat, glands, musk, different things like that, certain types of oils. If you keep them out of the sun, you know, direct sun, where like if you got a lure shop or something like that, half the day the sun's coming through there and you got them on a shelf and the sun's hitting them, that'll destroy a lure over a summer. Even with dark bottles, it's still going to get in there enough to do that. So if you're going to have them on a shelf with a window, put them in a box or something like that. The second biggest thing is heat. And I don't mean heat like, you know, during the summer it may get up to 80 degrees. I'm talking about heat as in, you know, keeping it in an old van or a metal, you know, the metal sheds that get like 150 degrees. One of my wood buildings, just the way it's set up on the southern part of my house, in the summertime, I've never put a thermometer in there. I guarantee it gets about 140 or 160 degrees. I can walk in there and like get dehydrated in 3 minutes. It is miserable in there. That heat will break down a lot of the organic stuff that's in lures. And you don't want that. So to keep it, just, you know, very simple and basic. You don't have to keep them in a refrigerator. You don't, just put them somewhere where it's consistently temperature as cool as you can get it. The back part of a garage, underneath a house, in a cooler, you know, something like that, and keep them out of the sun. And most good lures, which Hallbaker's is good lure, you know, most good lure makers, their lures will last for 30 years. As long as you don't beat them up with the sun or the heat. You know, that's the only thing that you really got to worry about. Now, what bait lures would you recommend for me in upstate New York? For coyotes, my common response to everybody, because it's what I grab all the time, the first thing that I'm grabbing when I get out of the truck to start setting coyote traps is Federale's bait and Boss Dog lure. That's the very first. Now, if you're gonna be trapping into late January or whenever it is, it'd probably still be middle late January even in New York. When the breeding season's on, I would switch from Boss Dog to Yoke Dope. If I just had one series of stuff that I'm using. So Federale's bait and then Boss Dog or Yoke Dope. If you're gonna get more than a couple of things, which I recommend, especially on 6 traps, because I have a feeling from your email that you're probably on, you know, like your farm or your neighbor's farm or something like that. You wanna mix those up. So like if this year you use Federale's, next year you use Gator Bait. If you use Boss Dog this year, maybe use Musky or Fur Check next year. And then keep switching back and forth. And you don't, just because you use Federale's and Boss Dog, say this year, on my one trap, I would just have Federale's. In another trap, I would at least just have Boss Dog. And then I would mix them up on the other ones. But you want to get as many smells as you can. And you know, if you see a hit car, I mean not a hit car, but a hit run over house cat from a car, or you got somebody that traps muskrat or beaver or, you know, deer scraps or something like that, don't be afraid to use those down a hole with a lure. And it's more for anything, just to keep the variance up for what the coyote's seeing. Because if you use the same lure, the same bait with the same style stat on the same property, eventually the coyotes kind of figure out what's going on. They just won't work them. And so that's why you always got to change that up. Those are the two I would recommend for New York would be Federales and Boss Dog. Next question. Expertise. I've been told many techniques for bobcat trapping and tried most logical ones with no results. I was wondering if you could give me some pointers and sets that work for you. I live in northern Missouri. Cats more plentiful than they've been in the past, and I've seen many wild bow hunting. I have numerous trails with tracks, and our creek banks are lined with sign. Just need a go-to set that has the best chance of success. Basically what I told the other two guys, Matt, it's cats. Cats are not a hard animal to catch, and people get mental blocks when they want something really bad, and they try to make it way more complicated than it needs to be. There again, if you go to my YouTube channel, you'll see, just like I was describing earlier, the long, narrow, almost like a chute going through a bunch of brambles with a tracking on one side and the traps on the other, and the traps facing the travel way, which would be the, you know, the trails you're talking about and the creek banks and stuff like that. So the trap would be, you know, right on the edge of that. And then when the cat's going down, you can actually put the trap in the trail. And even if he doesn't stop, you got a chance of catching. But if he just stops to look at the back of that chute, he's standing right over the kill area. But there again, don't put that trap so close to the attractor, even though I know that's what most people tell you to do, because you will get in trouble with that. Because most, I'm not going to say most cats, I would say about half cats do not go up to a set. They just kind of sit back and you know, think about all the world's problems. So that's what I would do. Keep it simple. And If you look at what I'm doing on YouTube, or if you want to really get in depth with it, you get the Cat Collector DVD, and I explain my whole system like to the ninth degree squared of everything I'm thinking with bobcats. You'll see that it's a very there's stages of why I'm doing what I'm doing, but it stays very simple. And people try to make something like a bobcat more complicated than they need to, because it makes them feel like they're working or trying harder. And that's not necessarily the case. You know, a cat's easy to catch. A dozen cats are easy to catch. 100 cats is not the same as catching a dozen cats, not for the most part normally, because the cats get harder to catch. It's harder to get on 100 cats. And, you know, simple is always going to be best when it comes to anything, but especially a bobcat. Because cats are kind of, what's a good way to put them? I mean, they can take it or leave it. You know, it's just like a house cat. You know, they want to be in your lap one day, and they don't want you in the room with them the next. And a bobcat that comes across the set is the same way. And the only thing I would say about if you're going to be setting on the creek trails, you know, with the high bank trails and stuff like that, get in the habit of guarding your bobcat traps. You know, like when I'm setting my traps out right now on the rivers and the creeks, I'll always go out about 5 or 6 feet from the trap on the trail, and I'll put in a Freedom Brand 1 or 2. Always put in a DP, because the raccoon are also going to be using those trails next to the water, and you want to get the raccoon out of the way so he's not in your cat set when the bobcat comes by and it's already full of a raccoon. So by using, you know, DPs, and you set them out there, so, you know, like all my Freedom Brand 1 and 2s are on drag. So they're, if I know I'm going to make a bobcat set, I've got my bobcat trap and drag, then I've got my 2 DP traps and drags, and then my lure and bait and stuff like that. So when I look around and see where I want to put it, the first thing I always do is I'm kind of getting the gauge exactly where the set's gonna be. I just throw the drag out, I set the Freedom Brands, poke it in the trail on each side, that gives me, you know, about a minute and a half, minute to kind of Jethro things over and think about what I want to do. But besides just the time to actually pick out the best place to do it, it guards those traps. And I really help you out if you've got raccoons where you're at. And being in Missouri, I'm pretty sure you got raccoons. So the next question we have is on beaver control and how to charge. And this is one of those that's a never ending question I get, and there's no way for me to answer this. Now, Tommy, you live in a very good state, by the way, since it's Tennessee. There are places with lots of beaver, which I'm sure you know, and you're getting landowner calls from landowners, and they have beaver problems, and you're wanting to know how do you charge or what you charge. Dude, that's totally up to you. And I'm not saying that as a cop-out. What you need to charge is what you need to charge. And it has nothing to do with what somebody else is charging. And the reason I say that, you'll get online and you'll ask that question, and you'll get a hold of somebody that lives outside of Washington, D.C. Well, they may charge $300-$400 a beaver because that's what the market bears. Well, it ain't gonna bear that in Tennessee. So you can't charge what they charge, you're not gonna have any business. Believe it or not, they have a lot more cost to do what you do to charge $300-$400 a beaver, because they gotta use probably a $300 trap because of the safety issues of where they're at. And a lot of them have to check them twice a day. There's a whole lot of different reasons. The bottom line with any business cost is, what are you comfortable making, and what does it cost you to do it? That's the only way you're going to be able to come up with your way of charging. That could be by the beaver. It could be by the job. It could be for a time period, like a two-week time period. You have to figure that out. But all that's kind of still smoke and mirrors. Your expenses are going to be what your expenses are, which is the way any business does this. If you go to a job and you know on your way out to do the bid or talk to the landowner or something like that, you need to know how many miles it is and a very good idea about how much fuel it takes for you to get there and get home, because that's an expense that you can't change. And then I would also look at if it's short or long distance. If it's long distance, you got to think more on wear and tear in your vehicle. Is it going to be out of your way? You know, if you got to drive an hour, are you going to be driving for 2 hours a day for free? Are you going to charge for that? But, you know, what is your insurance cost? You know, divide that by 30, know what it costs you per day. Any other costs you have as far as lures and snares and everything, all those costs are concrete. Those are not negotiable in any stretch of the imagination. They are what they are. And then that's like the baseline of where you start. So the other thing that you have to, and there's no way for me to tell you what you would charge, is what do you need to make? Now, I know everybody here that's listening to this wants to make $10,000 a beaver. But that's not very realistic. You know, we want the most we can get. I totally get that. But what is it that you would feel comfortable with doing? And, you know, some guys, that could be, you know, an extra $50 a day or $100 a day or, you know, $20 an hour. I've got a good friend that charges by the hour. And he if I remember, I charges $40 an hour, but that covers the travel expense and everything else. And when it's all said and done, he said he makes about $22 an hour, which is pretty good, especially in Tennessee. So, you know, that's one way to look at it. But you have to know what it is you want to make or you need to make to do it. Because if you go below the base number of your expenses and the base number of what you need to make, you're basically going to be not happy with the whole transaction to be over with. You're better off to turn down a job if they can't meet those two requirements. You know, if you have, if they want you to trap, see, there's a whole bunch of different things when it comes to charging ADC that you can get into a world of mess. You know, if they got 10 beaver and you catch 9 the first 3 days and then it takes 2 weeks to catch the last one, you can see how your expenses get all out of whack. If you catch all those beaver in 4 days, now you can kind of judge. But the thing with beavers, you really don't know. You don't know if they're going to be moving in. Are you going to be given some form of a time guarantee, you know, that to be beaver free? Anything like that? If so, you've got to take into consideration, well, if they pay me this, this also has to cover if I've got to come back, you know, and do that. But what you want to make is a personal thing, you know, and it depends on what your time is truly worth, not what you want it to be worth. You know, if you're just looking to make some extra money, well, what would make you happy making extra money? And that's kind of what you base it on, you know, base it on. If you've got a bunch of advertising you're doing and you're paying some crazy amount to build a website and you're buying new traps for every job, all that you have to take into consideration. But the biggest thing, you know, me and Jeff Dunlap's talked about this before. When we go out of state, the goal, and it's funny that we both had this same goal, the goal that we're shooting for day in and day out is $100. If I can generate $100 day in and day out, I'm going to be fine. Because I know that there's going to be a lot of days that's a whole lot more money. I mean, when you have otter bringing $100 and you have a nine otter day, that's a $900 day. Well, the day before only may have been one otter, so, you know, that's $1,000 for 2 days. That's pretty good. Well, at 3 days could be, you know, $1,100, which is still good for 3 days, you know. So that $100 minimum for us when we're out of state it was just interesting. We both chose it. Now, when you're staying at home, you may not get $100 a day. And it's going to also depend on where you're at. In a very rural area, you're not going to be able to charge as much. If you're in more of a city type environment where people are scared to death of beaver and they think they're going to come up and be a zombie and chew their legs off with their dogs, well, they're willing to pay more for that, and they're kind of expecting to pay more for that. So all that also needs to be, you know, taken into account. But the biggest thing is you got to know your expenses and you got to know what it is that you're comfortable making. And that's what you charge. And don't go below that. You're better off, a lot of guys that get into beaver work are better off sitting on the front porch drinking coffee than what they actually do. Because if you're losing money, I mean, you're not only working for free, you're working to lose money. And it's so easy when you first get into doing something like that that you want customers and get stuff going so bad that you make bad decisions on that, and it end up, you go backwards instead of forwards, and it just gets more difficult from there. So, you know, really think about what it is that you're comfortable making, and then whatever that is with the expenses, maybe a 10%, you know, wiggle room fee in there, and that's what you charge. And that's the simplest way I know how to put it, because there's all kind of formulas and crazy stuff people do. That's really what it boils down to. When it's all said and done, it's expenses and what you want to make, and that's your price. Okay, the last one we're going to do is scent control. There we go. This is from Mike. I live, I'm not going to say where, just starting to get into bobcat trapping. I'm curious about scent control for traps. I've purchased some CDR traps and was wondering, what do you do to a new trap? I'll be trapping other animals besides bobcats. I'll be trapping fox and coyotes. Thank you for your information. When it comes to bobcats, you get a trap out of a box, go use it. Period. Just go use it. The only way I would change what I'm saying right now is if you're going to have to be using salt and you're protecting the trap from the salt, not from the scent of the animal. A bobcat in a dirty trap makes no difference. I don't think it would really matter to a bobcat if you soaked it in lure. It's not going to make that much difference. They have no fear whatsoever. So worrying about scent control with bobcat trapping, it just doesn't, there's no reason to worry about it. Now, when it comes to fox and coyotes, I'm not a cynophobic type person. I've trapped with bare hands. I don't change gloves. I don't wear hip boots. You know, I try to be somewhat, you know, where I'm not getting lure and bait on my hands. You know, I don't like eating a big greasy breakfast or something like that where I've got grease dripping down me that I'm going to handle traps barehanded. You know, I'm using some common sense, but I'm not very phobic about this at all. To some people, it's a big deal, and I understand that. I mean, I've got some stuff that I came across when I was playing with some lures that kills odor. And most of the time, I will keep a bottle of that in my truck. And if I get into something, like the gas blows back on me, which a Jeep will do every now and then when you're putting gas in it and stuff like that, I will use this chemical that I spray on my hands just to, you know, somewhat clean it off. Or if I don't have that, I may go over to a creek with a bunch of leaves in there and kind of wash my hands and get around it. You know, but I'm not getting really, really tore up about it. But the way that I've learned over the years to have the most bulletproof traps as far as where the animals do, you know, they don't pay attention to the trap and they're very protective, is I take a trap, I go use it. When it gets a little bit of rust on it, I'll take a pressure washer and blow it off, let it dry, and then I'll spray paint it. Once that is dry, I will dip that in Full Metal Jacket. That combination of Full Metal Jacket that you can get at F&T and a lot of other dealers for that matter, that combination of the spray paint and Full Metal Jacket seems to be the best that I've ever done. You know, bowling traps and waxing traps, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just an ordeal. If you've got the time, knock yourself out. If you like doing that because it's a trapper meditation, getting the season started thing, I get it. Knock yourself out. What I like about the paint and the Full Metal Jacket is it's tough. And it's really hard for something to mess that up. I've got traps that I can use sometimes 2 years and 3 years before I've even got to think about redoing them. Now with a bowl and wax job, never like that. You know, and one thing I don't really care about the wax when it comes to the traps is wax absorbs odor. That's why it's in all perfumes and the facial products for women, because it absorbs odor. That's one of its functions that it does. So you put it in the back of a truck, you've got lured dead animals and stuff like that. The trap, even though it may be clean in a separate box, it's going to smell just like whatever it's around, because that's the function of wax. And to me, that makes me a little nervous. You know, that's not being, xenophobic or anything, but I wouldn't wipe lure on my trap and go set it, or bait on my trap and go set it. I don't want bait and lure in the bed of my trap, you know, when I'm bedding it down there. I don't want that either. I want to have somewhat, you know, as clean as reasonable possible to do that. And by using the wax, whatever's around it's absorbing into it, you know, be honest with yourself. After like a week and a half of trapping, you're rolling hard. Stuff starts stinking. And traps with wax are going to start stinking too. And that's always made me nervous. So I don't like that. Plus, you put a wax trap in a box with a bunch of other wax traps and they're beating up and down on each other. As you're going up and down the road, your wax is coming off. Well, the only way you're going to get Full Metal Jacket off a trap by doing that is you would have to put it in a sand cement mixer to get it off. I mean, it's that tough. So I'm looking for more bulletproof. I'm looking for something I don't have to mess with a lot of. I'm looking for something that I don't get dug up with, and that's just been the combination that I've come up with, and it works very well. But there's a lot of other things you could do. A lot of guys get away with gas dips on their coyote traps. You know, God bless them for that. That is not my, when I played around with that, it was not the reaction that I've got myself. So I can't really recommend that, but I'm not saying that if someone uses it, they're doing it wrong. It just didn't work here. If you're in a place, I think you're better off if you're going to try the gas dip stuff. If you're somewhere, Oklahoma, West Texas, West, where it's like no humidity, stuff doesn't rust, and you don't have any, without having any humidity, when you set those things out to dry with the gas, the environment that you're in sucks every bit of moisture out of everything, and those guys seem to do better off with the waxing. You know, around here, the way our rain is, the way it's been this year especially, we're running 80 and 90 to 95% humidity every day. And every time I've tried to use the gas stuff, it smells like gasoline no matter how long I let it dry out in the summer. And this makes me uncomfortable. And, you know, the amount of digouts I got up from it in my environment, the way that I was trapping, which could have been something I was doing wrong, it just didn't work very well. You know, there's a lot of guys that just bowl traps, and they do fairly well as long as they don't have to use salt. I've done that several times. There's a lot of guys that just spray paint traps and don't full metal jacket, and that's probably still tougher than trapping wax. So, you know, there's all kind of just all these options that you can do. The biggest thing is, you know, just use some common sense when you're going out and using them. Most of the time, if an animal's digging up your trap, it's because he's walking on hard ground, then he hits soft ground, and they start kind of digging around, and there's the trap. In the trapper's mind, the animal dug his trap out because he knew the trap was there. And I don't think in the real world of the outdoors, that's really what happens most of the time. Or they're coyote trapping, and they automatically think, because they've got coyotes on the brain, that if the trap gets dug up, it's by a coyote. Even if there's coyote tracks there, was there raccoons, possums, or skunks there ahead of time? Because when you have hard dirt, and all of a sudden any one of those three animals hits soft dirt, like around the edge of a trap bed and stuff like that, they start digging around in it with their front feet. Then they find parts of the trap. You know, they don't know it's a trap. If they did, they'd run away from it at that point. It's just soft dirt that they can dig in. Especially in frozen ground, this can be a big issue. So, you know, I'm not sure it's always the scent that people, to me, that's more of a scapegoat that people use to make themselves feel better about other stuff that could be going wrong. Not sure, just think about it. But that's the way I do traps anyway. You know, Mike, I hope that helped you out. And this is going to be the end of the show. We've been rambling here for a while, and I just want to tell everybody, man, it's already January. Don't let the whole season slip by you now. Go trapping.